SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Song setting straight off for the lead. Goldakova began beautifully and goes up a joint second. Precious Kitten is on the inside of that, and here's Daytona now moving up to take third. Kip DeVille hugs the rail three lengths off the lead as the pace is good early. Then back to Shakis in the blue colours. Awesome Gem up alongside of that, and Bold Chieftain in the red colours is now six off these leaders. US Ranger towards the rear. Warmongers alongside of that, and Garrett Gomez tucks What's the Script into last. What's the Script is 12 off the lead. Onto the backstretch they go, and as expected, Thorn Song sets the pace. It's a good one, too. A length and a half to Daytona. Now here's Goldakova in a good spot, tucked in third down at the rail. Just in behind that comes Kip DeVille. Precious Kitten is up alongside of him. They four off the leaders. Then a gap at three back to Bold Chieftain in six. Awesome Jen is next. Shakis has now been asked to pick it up at the rail. Warmonger in the red cap, seven lengths off the leaders, then US Ranger. And What's the Script, still being patiently ridden, is now nine off the leader. They come into the top of the hill now, and Thorn Song the leader, but Daytona comes to tackle, and here's Daytona to get the lead. Now he's kicked early, but Daytona gets the lead. Goldakova tucked in the white cap now. Can she get out of there? Goldakova waiting patiently for room. Nowhere to go. Here's Precious Kitten, the other filly, running a big one, and Kip DeVille, the grey. Kip DeVille is let loose, but Goldakova goes through at the rail, and look at the acceleration from Goldakova as she bursts forward. And what a brilliant filly is this. Goldakova in an awesome effort, outrun Kip DeVille to win it well.
Now, had to start the morning with the first of the three straight Breeders' Cup Mile wins by the Hall of Famer Goldakova. News about 3-4 hours ago comes as at age 16, Goldakova passes, and this is a passing. We talk so often about, you know, the inevitability, obviously, and the lifespan. I always, my go-to reference is always Shug McGahee, who is stoic about horse passings. And, you know, part of part of the life cycle. And it just feels at 16 that, you know, we could have had her around, you know, another 8, 10, 12 years, outpouring of appreciation for a race mare that, in a lot of ways, to me, it had a perfect career. And I don't know if anybody saw the tweet I put out, but this is one of those European horses that comes over and, as a North American-based horse player and fan, and I'm sure the stakeholders collectively, I mean, everybody wants to win on the biggest stage like Breeders' Cups, but you don't mind when something as special as Goldakova, and of course the other mare that Freddie Head is associated with, Miesque. And then also, I always think of Ouija board in this, you know, pantheon. They come over and they come back, and you take an interest in the rest of their starts and their, you know, career abroad. But you get excited about them coming back. I mean, it's always one of the biggest stories in the Breeders' Cup when defending, you know, the defending runners are, you know, very frequently the focus, you know, which is not unusual. They're going to be favored typically, and, you know, they're on their way to legendary careers. Nobody accomplished what she did, which was to come back for the third mile. We're going to hear the three Breeders' Cup miles in this first I don't know, 40 minutes probably of the show, and going to be delighted to, even under the occasion, under the circumstances, to have Nick Luck join us in about 15 minutes and let Nick opine on her amazing, just incredible career. I mean, she had one misfire in her entire 27-start career. And it actually, when you think about it, you can kind of understand. She tried to start her season off in the Prix d'Espagne, and a mile and an eighth, softish turf, and might just not have been keyed up yet. But it was just one miscue, really, in an incredible career. And she won 17 of 27. And had another 6 seconds and 3/3. So in the money, 26 of 27 times, and virtually after the win in the pre-Chloe at Maison Lafitte in 08, that she had run in two grade ones, two group ones, and then her first group victory came in the Chloe. And from that point on, ran in nothing but the biggest races in Europe and the United States. At a variety of distances, I mean, she pretty much got locked into, to the 7-to-a-mile variety at a certain point. I suppose it was actually, I'm just looking, it was after the Prix d'Espagne. That feels like the time that, that pretty much locked her in to a mile and 7.5, Prix de Ferret, 6.5. It was a little sharp for her, 6.5, but the 7.5 to 8, she was just incredible, just unbelievable. And in fact, I'm just noticing the Prix de Forêt, she was beaten twice. And then when you look at the horses that beat her, in fact, they are Dream Ahead. And in the first try, Verinar, when she got beat, Canford Cliffs beat her in her second attempt at the Queen Anne. I watched the Queen Anne this morning. If we have time, we'll get the Queen Anne in there. Olivier Peslier, he's quoted. Freddie had this morning, hours ago, saying that the yard was quite, downcast. You're going to hear from Freddie Head today, and one of the things that I tweeted part of that, trying to be respectful and show the deference to how wonderful she was. For those it's actually only 3 years ago, which surprised me. And Casey, I reached out to Case to try to find the segment. For those that have been listening going back 3 years, there was that crazy moment, and we'll listen to it. Maybe I don't know if Nick's got time to hang around and hear it after he's finished, but. Word came that the Goldakova was getting into our Hall of Fame, and I got Freddie Head's number, and Casey called him, and we put him. Casey didn't explain to him why we were calling exactly. We just kind of assumed that he knew. And if you hang around this hour, you'll hear it when I welcomed Freddie Head to the show and said congratulations on Goldakova, and he said, "What did she do now?" And he nobody had let Freddie Head know that Goldakova had been elected to the American Hall of Fame, and I can't tell you how tickled I was and continue to be, and it's one of my favorite and most treasured things that you know, I've been fortunate the pleasure to do as part of, you know, as part of presenting the game in this fashion. And I don't remember much of the rest of the call. We're going to hear it in this hour. And so Nick Luck and Freddie head to pay tribute to Goldikova. And, you know, even that last attempt when she tried to win a fourth straight Breeders' Cup, I mean, it's going to be, you know, winning three is you know, was plenty. And her season at six was you know, was less of a campaign. Not that she, you know, she didn't finish worse than third. That was in the Breeders' Cup and beating the length. But, you know, she was second in, I mentioned, the Prix de Forêt. She also got beat at the Ville and also in that Queen Anne. I mean, so she did win. She won 1-2. She was 2-3-1 in her seasonal finale or career finale year. Just exceptional. 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. 5 seasons, and you know, she won it first asking at Chantilly. She competed at Chantilly, Longchamp, Maison Lafitte, Deville, Santa Anita, Churchill Downs, Newmarket, and Ascot. And I think effectively under those conditions, she won. She won at Newmarket, right? Yes. She won at any track. Yeah, she won at any track in her career. 8 different surfaces, and she won at least once at all of them. And, of course, multiple times at DeVille and Longchamp and Santa Anita, etc. Chantilly, Goldikova. And you remember at the beginning, didn't we, for the first 10 minutes of her career, I think, weren't we a little, was it Goldikova? Should it be Goldikova? And I remember right at the beginning when we started to anticipate her coming, and you know, she came on a nice run. She had won that Chloe I mentioned, then the Rothschild at DeVille, and then the Prix de Moulin. And so she came to the U.S. on a winning streak, and went off at, you know, she went off at 9-5. She was favored. The race you just heard, and then she was, she was 9-5, and then she was 3-2. It's kind of interesting, actually. She was never much below that. It's kind of interesting. Big fields too in the miles. You heard some of those names that were being called out by Trevor Denman, and Trevor called all three of the wins, as you're going to hear. We're going to listen in a minute or two to the second win, and then after we talk to Nick, we'll listen to the one he wanted to hear, which is the mile. I said to him, what race do you want to play of hers? And he didn't hesitate. He said 2010 mile. I thought he might come up with that Queen Anne win. The Queen Anne win, she strikes the front, obviously on the straight at Ascot, and then Paco Boy came running at her. Paco Boy, I had forgotten how close that was, that Paco Boy had really made up ground on her, and was held safe. And of course, Paco Boy would show up. Paco Boy ran against her too, in that was in the third, I think. Yeah, it was in the third. It was in the third Yeah, it was in the third of her three wins that Paco Boy faced her again. So maybe we'll get, if we get the, we, I Casey's got a stack of cuts to play as the morning unfolds. Let me pause from Goldova, because we're going to talk about her more over the next half hour, certainly, and let Nick, kind of put her in perspective, historically, and certainly from the recent vintage, let's say since the start of this millennium, these 2 decades, and the Breeders' Cup era, obviously, isn't she in the top half a dozen, right, of the first, first 20 years of the century? Easily, right? Well, I'll let Nick. Nick, nobody's better than this kind of thing than Nick. So looking forward to Nick Luck joining us in just a couple of minutes. Give you a quick rundown, too, of what else is going on this Wednesday. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. First conversation of the season with Sid. It should be noted, Sid seems to show up, and we seem to have an appointment to converse on any number of historic Wednesdays. Sid this morning and Aaron Crady. I as promised, I can't, we can't kick off the TCA Stallion Auction these next less than 72 hours, call it the next 60 hours. TCA's enormous fundraiser starts now, started in the last 15 minutes, and goes till Friday afternoon. So we'll get Aaron Crady in here, and we'll see how her Christmas and New Year's was. We talked to her, I think December, right at the beginning of December, and we were kind of looking forward to this. She always visits the first week of the year to talk about the Stallion Auction. I had promised on Monday, as we were reviewing some of the sadder portions. It does feel like we've been not obligated. It's a responsibility to talk about the industry participants, and Rick Mocklin is going to join us. And Rick, in the difficult scenario of having been close to both Kenny Bork and Fred Amy. And in fact, Fred had services yesterday for Fred, and Rick Mocklin's going to join us, and he'll pay tribute to two very close friends, and Chopper, Kenny Bork was, Rick says they were friends from childhood. So Rick Mocklin, joining us today. Ed DeRosa in hour three. It's first Wednesday opportunity to connect with Ed, and we'll catch up with the activities on Twin Spires and the Briz team, and Seth Merrow, of course. I didn't talk to Seth over the holiday. Maybe a text, but I didn't get a chance to call Seth, and so we'll wish him a happy merry plus post. I got to see him plenty of times on Capital OTB, so there it is. Nick Luck, Aaron Crady, Sid Fernando, Rick Mocklin, Ed DeRosa, and Seth Merrow. And I better slip this in right now, because if I don't, I'm it's going to go by the boards. Thanks to Todd Fincher, folks, right? How many of you cashed last night? She's My Gem, late afternoon. That was good. She's My Gem. And really, Todd Fincher was so direct about the prospects he thought he had at Delta yesterday and Monday, with Secular Nation, and Secular Nation, you know, did everything, literally did all the heavy lifting, only to get nailed at the wire by Boldore, and that, you know, I think maybe a half a length in the end. No such concerns yesterday, because She's My Gem strikes the front, and she paid $13. This was okay. So the Into Mischief mare for Dale Taylor, a clear winner. And I know a few people, it seemed, on Twitter and so forth, cashed on Todd's push of his mayor and of his Secular Nation. So there you go. The Orleans yesterday at Delta Downs did okay. Nick Luck is going to join us, and ahead of Nick, let's listen to the second of the three Goldakova victories, this in 2009, and then after we talk to Nick, we'll hear the third. Here he is again, Trevor Denman, and back at Santa Anita for the second try, Goldakova.
Bill sent on their way. Cowboy Cal both beautifully and sets off for the lead. Courageous Catch joins in. What's the script going to show speed down at the rail? On the outside, here comes Gladiatorus. Now Gladiatorus going right on by. Karelian in the red cap getting a good spot, and Delegator is taken back to six, four lengths off from the pace. Is pretty strong early on. Here's Zaquinto in the pink cap racing back fifth. Laz Fernley has to go a little wide. Court Vision is scraping the paint, giving them eight lengths start. Goldakova, the filly, second last now. Goldakova, second last, a good 10 off that leader. And then at the back is Just Enough Humor. Down the back stretch they go now, and Gladiatorus ensuring a fast pace. He's almost sprinting. Gladiatorus now being almost pushed along on the lead. Cowboy Cal is second. What's the script on the far side is third. Then we come back to Karelian, comfortable in the fourth spot. Courageous Cat is now giving them seven lengths start. Delegator's in behind that. Then we have Zaquinto, a good eight lengths off these leaders. The back marker's trying to pick it up now. Then Fernley, Court Vision. Goldakova is still second last out here. Goldakova, let's see. She's been asked to go now. Goldakova starts to pick it up, but she's seven off the leaders. They come into the top of the lane, and Cowboy Cal strikes the front. Goldakova in the white cap, hooked to the extreme outside. Courageous Cat gets the lead, but Goldakova is coming home like an express train down the center. Courageous Cat running a huge one. Goldakova's going to have to switch out a little. She does so, though. Coming with a late run, Just Enough Humor. But Goldakova is just scintillating. Goldakova is something special. Goldakova and Olivia Paley win it again. Courageous Cat was second. Close then for third, Just Enough Humor and Court Vision.
There it is, two for two, and she ends her four-year-old campaign with her second Breeders' Cup, and we really, at that point, you know, didn't necessarily know what was ahead, and right now ahead and joining us, I can hear that Nick Luck is with us. Nick, Happy New Year, first of all.
And to you, Steve. Nice to talk to you.
Nick, this kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, you know, 16 years old, and there's the appropriate outpouring of respect and appreciation for literally, you know, the last 20 years, one of the top five racehorses we've seen.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. You could probably find a half dozen with a higher international rating, if you like, a higher classification, a sort of higher numerical assessment of what they've achieved. But I don't think you could find a horse who had achieved quite as much on two continents, or had achieved that equivalent level of superiority on two continents, or indeed a female that had bettered males on so many occasions. It wasn't just that she did it once or twice. She did it, you know, I think 8 out of her 14 group or grade 1 wins came against males. It's a remarkable statistic. Her body of work, as well as the merit of each individual achievement, combined to make her genuinely one of the modern greats, I think.
You know, I haven't. I've obviously, you know, touched already on a lot of the you know, the overall accomplishments. I haven't acknowledged the Wertheimers as part of this. I should extend, you know, the sympathies. We mentioned Freddie Head, of course, and a daughter of a Naba. And as Freddie referenced in his quote to Racing Post, Nick, he said it didn't take long for them to realize that she was something unique.
Yeah, and the only disappointment to them must have been that in her classic season, in her three-year-old season, she was beaten two or three times, but she ran up against Zarkava, who's one of the best fillies I've ever seen. Okay, her career didn't last as long, but it was undefeated and ended up with a barnstorming victory in the Arc. So she was finishing on the back of a brilliant filly two or three times at the beginning of her three-year-old career. Freddie Head and his team must have been thinking, my God, what are we doing wrong here? Well, the answer is not very much. He's had the misfortune to run into another one of the modern great fillies in those first three starts. And then she never really looked back. And I think she was occasionally brilliant in Europe. I think her Jacques Mamawa defeat of Aklan by six lengths, which was two starts before that second Breeders' Cup triumph, he just played, was probably her best performance in terms of absolute undiluted merit. But she did post some very good ones in Europe. That one, the victory at Royal Ascot, was very good. But I just loved watching her in the States. I loved watching her in those Breeders' Cups. If you could design a model horse for a Breeders' Cup mile, it was her. She had that perfect combination of sort of an ability to settle, yet race hard on the bridle and travel. So she, you know, she would travel so well. She would go around those left-handed bends on rails like she was born and made to do it. Well, she was never too keen, but she was still aggressive. It was just a perfect combination. And then she just conserved enough to unleash that explosive turn of foot. And then, you know, just as soon as she broke out of the stalls, Pellier is so brilliant. He could just get her to relax, get her breathing, get her into a perfect rhythm. And you knew that if she was there, you know, with a furlong to run, he'd get there. And they were a beautiful combination to watch, really beautiful combination to watch. He's such an elegant rider, and she was such a filly with just that dash of brilliance when the conditions were absolutely spot on for her.
In that first, and you know, to that point, in that first Breeders' Cup win, the first trip to Santa Anita, she was up close and was kept close. And then I think it was probably, you can sort of hear it in Trevor Denman's voice, you know, a bit of a surprise that she was as far back as she was in the return trip, and, you know, makes this, you know, nearly back to front rally. And then she was sort of midfield in the third attempt. And it just kind of, as she matured, it just seemed that, as you say, Pellier could really place her anywhere, and she would respond when asked. To that point too, Nick, it is noticeable that the Prix de Foray, she got beat twice at 6.5. It really felt like the 7-8 is what she needed.
Yeah, and she wanted a little bit of pace to run at as well, I think. And Foray can be a slightly muddling race. I'm not sure that Longchamp was necessarily her track either, going around that right-hand bend. I'm not sure it really suited her that well. And also, I think as time went on, you know, obviously you get your sort of, every racehorse has that buccaneering period, don't they, when they're three and maybe four. And then as time ticks on a bit, you start to have to box clever because, you know you're not going to get them peaking every time they go to the races. So I think Freddie Head was probably quite mindful of that. And whilst she was still campaigned very aggressively by international standards, he was probably needing to leave a little bit in the tank. Yeah, the first time they went to the Breeders' Cup, yeah, she was just, as I say, buccaneering her way through the season. When they started going back and it became the ultimate target each year, then he was going to try and leave a bit for later on in the campaign. So that probably partly explains why she was getting beaten in the Foray as well. But she was just a great filly to watch. And not the easiest, I don't think, either at home. I think, you know, that kind of aggression was manifest in some of her antics at home as well. I mean, she's a very generous filly on the track, but I think she could be difficult enough off it. And she evidently, you know, hasn't been the easiest in the breeding shed either. Although it should be noted she hasn't been a complete dud at stud. She's produced a classic place filly. filly who was third in the Prix de Diane, Terakova. She only had the three starts. You know, she's a group winner and group one place just behind Sister Charlie in the Prix de Diane. So, you know, that family, that legacy can live on well enough. And her own sister, Galikova, was a pretty smart horse as well.
Yeah.
She was a classic winner. So you know, the family goes on, hopefully.
Nick, it remind us, and we're going to listen. I tweeted the story or the anecdote earlier this morning, and I mentioned it in our opening that I had the incredible privilege and delight of accidentally informing Freddie Head that she had made the U.S. Hall of Fame. We're going to listen to that after your visit, and there really was a certain serendipity and magical element to Freddie Head with this filly and then mare, given his association and his success with Miesque, that Freddie Head has a direct hand in five Breeders' Cup Mile wins. It's something unique in American racing annals.
Yeah, and actually, I was just saying, it's really rare for any horse, let alone a filly, to dominate on both sides of the Atlantic. But of course, Miesque was the obvious forerunner, wasn't she? She was the obvious one by comparison. I remember sort of until Goldakova came along, everyone said, "Do you know Miesque won 10 Group 1s?" And they were Group 1s when Group 1s or Grade 1s really meant something and they weren't dished out cheaply. And then Goldakova came along and won 14. Now, admittedly, there's three or four of Goldakova's that weren't great races, and they were at relatively recent additions to the European pattern and designed to incentivize the fillies. But as I said, she won so many of them against the males and the three Breeders' Cup Miles that, the comparisons bear a fair bit of scrutiny.
I don't recall, and I was leading to a question about how quickly they decided, the Wertheimers and Freddie Head, that she would come back for a third try.
A third try and a fourth try, yeah.
Right. Right. I don't remember if it was instantaneous that we expect to keep her in training or that kind of thing. I always remember Lord Darby with Ouija board when being asked about coming back, and he was like, "Oh, you bet." It was clear that he was going to campaign her as long as he could.
Well, I think they were pretty keen to come back for the third go. I can't remember whether it took them a little while to decide to come back for a fourth. I mean, there's no doubt she still won two Group 1s in her final season.
Yes.
But she definitely lost the step. There's no doubt about that. And actually, the level of her form across that entire campaign suggested she'd lost half a step. And then that was manifested in that Breeders' Cup Mile where somehow, as a mark of respect, I think they let her keep third when she should have been chucked out and placed last. But that's neither here nor there. I do remember that final Breeders' Cup she ran in when she was... Was it Core Vision who won it, wasn't it?
Yes.
Was it Core Vision who won that? Yeah.
The worst beat ever.
Yeah. So, but I was on Goldakova duty all afternoon, and I'd been talking up how she was going to win. This was because the Classic was a rather dull race that year, wasn't it? It was, apart from the human interest story, it was Drosselmeyer and Game on
Two.
And so there wasn't like a real superstar, and so ESPN was sort of building the show around to a large extent around Goldakova, and they moved the Breeders' Cup Mile to the penultimate race to give it a bit more build up. It actually sat out of order for a couple of years to give her a bit more of a make her a headline act. And so I'm obviously on Goldakova duty all day. And I was sent up to the very, very top of Churchill Downs to stand with the Wertheimers and Freddie Head while she got beaten. I just wanted the ground to open up and swallow me. Of course, as soon as I realised she wasn't going to win, this is not the Hollywood ending I'd quite imagined, or anyone in the production team had imagined. Particularly given that the winner and the runner-up. Well, I think the runner-up was a big prize horse as well, wasn't he?
Yeah,
anyway, I don't remember, but
it was Tour Allure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a wacky exacta, wasn't it? And then she'd wiped half the field out as well, and et cetera. And so there was a very, very stony silence going down in the elevator. Freddie Head Alain Gerard Wertheimer, me, a cameraman, and an AP coming down in the lift in total silence with someone probably yelling in my ear, Do you have him yet? And me just going, wait a minute. It was, it was a slightly dispiriting. Slightly dispiriting experience all round, but that was the disappointment was only as intense because the expectation had been so great, and the expectation was only so great because she'd been such a brilliant filly and a brilliant mare at the Breeders' Cup. You know, that event, that race, that turf mile round two turns was just absolutely designed for her.
Well, when I asked you about your preference, your favorite race, and I You answered immediately the third Breeders' Cup. We're going to listen to it here momentarily. But I was a little surprised. I thought maybe you would lean for the Queen Anne. I see where Peslier is. He's talking about the Queen Anne. And I had forgotten. I watched it this morning. I'd forgotten how close Paco Boy got to her in the late stages.
Yeah, I see. Paco Boy was a pretty good horse on his day, but he wasn't that good, and I didn't think she was at her very, very best either time at Ascot, really. It was good performance, and then she got beat by Camford Cliff the next year in the Queen Anne, or two, either the next year or the year after that. I thought she was very good one day at Newmarket in the Falmouth Stakes. She was very, very good at Deauville that one time. She was absolutely explosive. I think she opened up by 6 or 7 and beat a Group 1 winner as well doing it. But I just think those Breeders' Cups were her sort of signature performances. They were the most exciting ones. And the third one, she had to go to a different track and prove she could do it against a slightly different group of horses. And, you know, she Pellier had been cheeky on her the previous year, but he was going to make damn sure of it in 2010, which is when she won the third one. That was a good day, wasn't it? Even your most ardent Zenyatta fan can say that was a good day now. I mean, that Goldakova sprinting clear in the mile and that epic clash with Blame and Zenyatta, I think that was a really special afternoon evening.
Agreed. And that field, that third field, you know, the mile's always interesting and unusual, sometimes agglomeration of talent, but she's going to, you know, beat Gio Ponti, the usual QT for Jim Cassidy,
yeah.
Paco Boy, Court Vision, Sydney's Candy.
Proper horses. It was a good race.
The third one, and this is an accomplishment that, was going to stand alone, and I can't remember, actually. I guess I'm trying to think of who else had tried to win a third of any.
Oh, did Lear try? Did Wise Dan try and win a third?
I think he did. You mentioned Lure. I think Lure did as well. I think you're right about adding Lure.
So they're the dual mile winners, or the multiple mile winners. Lure won two, didn't he? All the Breeders' Cup statisticians will be screaming at the radio now. Lure 1-2, Wise Dan 1-2, Goldakova 1-3. Have there been any other multiples?
No, Teppan didn't win. Teppan didn't.
Did she win twice?
No, I think just, right. no, just
we're getting,
once.
We're getting ourselves
once.
All mixed up. Now, anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Nick, sad that this is the first opportunity to talk this year, but I appreciate the opportunity to pay appropriate tribute.
I'm not going to see much of you face to face, Steve. So it's nice to be able to talk to you even in the unfortunate circumstances.
Well, you're locked down again, right? What's
we are?
Where do things stand?
Lockdown 3. And it's no better a movie than lockdowns 1 or 2. Lockdown 3 here, I'm afraid. It's not good. Situation's bad in the UK. I mean, the the good news is that the vaccine is now being rolled out. So that's really the hope that enough vulnerable people can get vaccinated by the spring, and that'll mean that, you know, fingers crossed the country can kind of emerge in the summer months and return to some semblance of normality. But you fancy the road is still pretty long, yeah, the new strain or the new variant seems to have galloped through the country remarkably quickly.
Best of luck, Nick. I hadn't thought to think ahead to, you know, your usual attendance and the NBC assignments, but good.
May. I'm aiming for May. I reckon that's my best shot at the moment.
Well, exactly, and we'll talk certainly, obviously, you know, many times between now and then, but appreciate the quick, timely visit to say goodbye to an all-time great, Goldikova. Here is the third try and third straight Breeders' Cup mile win. Olivier Pellier and Freddie Head with the Wertheimer's Goldikova.
Perfect start. Goldikova not quick into stride, though. She's dropping in mid-pack. Fastest into stride here is Sydney's Candy, and Sydney's Candy all alone out here on the lead. Get Stormy's racing along second. Beethoven kicks through at the rail. The usual QT is pulling very hard. The usual QT wants to go on now. He's pulled his way up to be a joint second. Now here's Goldikova, caught a little wide in the turn. In the white cap is giving them five length start. Just in front of that, Delegator is going up closer. Court Vision has the white blinkers down at the rail. They are followed by Paco Boy, who's back fourth last, gives them seven length start. Proviso's at the back of the leading group. And then we come back to Gio Ponti. Gio Ponti's 10 lengths off the leaders. And another four back to Society's chairman. They run towards the half-mile pole now, and Sydney's Candy's ensured a good pace. Sydney's Candy by a length to Get Stormy. Beethoven's tucked in at the rail in third. On the outside of that, Frankie Dettori and Delegator are fourth. Then the usual QT is losing ground. Now here's Goldikova back six, and let's see. Goldikova has seven to make up. Goldikova's going to have to kick it in. They turn for home, and Sydney's Candy still strong on the lead. And Sydney's Candy gets a tap on the shoulder. It's unwinding her run in the center of the track. Goldikova's let loose. She's flying. Sydney's Candy, the usual QT's in there as well. But Goldikova's catching with each and every stride. Are we to see history this afternoon? Here's Paco Boy late. But no, Goldikova, a true champion. Three Breeders' Cup wins. Olivia Pellier, the perfect ride. Goldikova has won. Gio Ponti, the usual QT, and Paco Boy lined up to chase her home.
There it is, three Breeders' Cup miles in a row, and Goldikova. I can tell you that it made it easy to handicap the mile during that period. You just had to figure out, you know, what who to use with Goldikova. Well, I appreciate Nick's visit. And is Nick gone, Case? I guess that's a yes. Okay, he is. All right. Thanks to Nick Luck. And I, you know, Nick sending up the flare about the situation, in the UK, and, you know, they're in a bad way too, of course, and hadn't thought that he wouldn't be able to, you know, he made it over for Cup and Derby, but the first coverage, NBC coverage, usually kicks off around March, right? March, April. So not easy. We're going to stay and add a coda to the Goldikova, a Goldikova to the tribute. And this is audio from 3 years ago. And it had to be April because the Hall of Fame nomination process and announcement is invariably is it's always when we're in Louisville. It's always when we're in Derby. Usually that weekend they usually release the Sunday, Monday between the 2 weeks that we're, because I always seem to have we had that conversation with Steve Asmussen, and I think of who else. There's been a couple of other Breeders' Cup, not Breeders' Cup, but Hall of Fame inductee pieces. So it was April, and we called to congratulate and get a reaction from Freddie Head, and you're going to listen to it now. It's just a handful of minutes. Freddie Head being informed that Goldikova had become a Hall of Famer.
Oh, there he is. Freddie, congratulations.
Yes.
Freddie, salutations, congratulations.
What? No, listen, it's a bit of a surprise. What you're talking about?
Goldikova.
Yeah, Goldikova, yes.
The Hall of Fame, American Hall of Fame.
Oh, she got in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know.
I love it. I'm delighted to be able to inform you.
That's great. I'm so happy. She was such a phenomenon. So I'm very happy. Very happy.
Freddie, her trips to the U.S. and the three straight wins and the pleasure she brought you and the Wertheimers. Talk about her career and experience the 5 years.
Well, you know, she's been very good all through her career. She was a champion at three. She fell on a mare called Zarkava, who beat her in the French Guineas and in the Prix de Yann. The distance was a bit too far for her. But then afterwards, she kept on winning. She's won 14 Group 1 races. And she was always running against the colts and in three different countries. So she was something very, very special. Very special to me.
I can recall the conversations at the time as she was establishing herself and the obvious comparisons to Miesque.
Yes. Yeah. Huh. Yes. I rode Miesque all through a career. It was difficult to compare them, but she was she's a bit tougher than Miesque, but Miesque was a true champion too. I mean, it's very difficult to compare horses, you know, through the years, but they're both very, very, very great mares.
In terms of keeping Goldikova, obviously in training, that's part of it. But for a filly, sometimes they can be difficult and they lose their interest in the game. For her to sustain the kind of career she had, Freddie, it really is remarkable, from 2 to 6.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when she runs, she's had very hard fought races, and she was always giving her best. And I remember when she was 6, we came back for the 4th time. Then she wasn't as good, but she still ran 3rd in the Breeders' Cup, which was something very special. And she was always extraordinary. And extraordinary to train, because she was just working in the morning exactly the same as she was in her races. And she gave her best all the time.
Well, for you and for the Wertheimers and for Olivier Pelletier, just a wonderful honor, Freddie. And I know that the Hall of Fame would be eager and would be delighted if you'll come to Saratoga this summer for her ceremony.
Well, I'd love to. If I can, I will come.
I cannot tell you what an honor it's for me as well, personally, Freddie, to be the one to let you know. Goldie Kova,
okay, well,
Hall of Fame.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Freddie Head, folks, and what a wonderful opportunity to talk to Freddie on this occasion and to let him know, yes, Goldie Kova, what about her? I love it. So great. The daughter of Anaba and just an amazing career. And, you know, when horses like this, when they get the comeback over and over again, it's horses like her and Ouija Board, Mies too, that and the other a lot of the other international stars that came to the U.S. for the Breeders' Cup. And one of the, I think, lasting influences and important and I suppose underappreciated aspects of what the Breeders' Cup has done is the contribution to North American racing, the looking outside our borders and the international game, and how, as we talk on this show so often now, and you know, we look to, you know, the Hong Kong discussions we're having, and of course, you know, the World Cup and Dubai contributes to this as well. But the Breeders' Cup and a horse like Goldie Kova, when she captures the interest of the American bettor and fan, and then you watch her, you know, after, you know, she comes to the U.S. and then you watch her, you know, go back to Europe and campaign at Longchamp and Ascot and everywhere else she was successful. It does, I think, contribute mightily to, you know, how international in scope the game is for us now compared to certainly when I first started taking an interest in the game, the cultivation of the international side of the sport, the Goldie Kovas of the world go a long way. Well, I want to thank Jim Mulville, who made this possible and provided a way to reach Freddie Head. We'll take a break. Bottom of the hour, 2.5 have just whistled by, and oh, there he is.
that was a lot of fun. I had not heard that, I don't think, since 2017 when Freddie was on with us, and that it was just, you know, it was pretty serendipitous. You can hear I'm an easy read, right? How tickled I was to, you know, be the one to tell Freddie Head that Goldie Kova had made the Hall of Fame. Well, it was kind of a special 45 minutes or so to pay tribute to one of the great, great, great champions of, you know, of our lifetime as bettors and fans, Goldie Kova. Right now, I think waiting in the wings, Aaron Crady. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's the first week of the new year. Aaron Crady's always on at the races the first week of the new year.
Excellent. We certainly appreciate that. We've got a lot going on. We like to start the year off, you know, with a bang for sure.
Well, we're talking, of course, about the 33rd Charities of America's annual, 31st annual Stallion Season Auction, and we'll go through some of the details. Things kicked off at 9 a.m. They'll go to 4:30 on Friday, and then there's also the, you know, the non-season silent auction with all kinds of memorabilia and goods and services. But, you know, looking at 31st annual, it occurs to me to ask, Aaron, I don't think I've ever asked this question, yeah. And of course it predates your involvement at TCA. Whose idea originally, do you know, if you know, was Stallion Season Auctions as a fundraising mechanism?
Right. I do know the answer to that, and it's a really cool story. So as you may know, our founders are Herb and Ellen Mollis and, of course, the late Allaire DuPont. And in 1990, that dynamic trio got together and determined that they really wanted to do something to support what is today known as thoroughbred aftercare. So they got together, they you know, pulled in some of their friends there in the Mid-Atlantic area, and in the Molis's living room there on Candyland Farm in Delaware, Ellen Molis made a feast, from what I'm told, and had you know, several people over to their home, and they had a small sort of dinner and art auction. And that auction raised $15,000, and they donated that money to the TRF. And from there, it became an annual event there at Candyland Farm. And in 2007, the live auction moved to Kentucky. So it's, you know, it's really been kind of a labor of love over the years for the Molises, and, you know, we owe all of this, all of what TCA has done, to that first dinner auction there in Middletown, Delaware.
How about that? I'm glad I asked. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know the origin story, and it's actually, you know, much like things like the Maryland Million, it ended up being and Bobby Humphrey's 2-year-old. You know, juvenile special cards, the kind of thing that has been duplicated around the industry and you know, is now, you know, part of the fabric, right, of fundraising mechanisms.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, now with the Stallion Season auction, that was certainly, you know, Herb Molis's idea, from what I understand, to kind of have horses helping horses. So, you know, I have to give him all the credit for that. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, they're kind of duplicated. This is Stallion Season auction time of year. You know, they're abundant, but it is our largest annual fundraiser, and it really sets the tone for us for the year.
Well, and as we talked in December, it is the major, you know, a major source of the funding mechanism that TCA then uses as a, you know, as a fund to distribute out. And for those, you know, for those that might not, you know, be aware of TCA's good work, Aaron, let's explain the grant process and you know, the kinds of recipients of the grant.
Sure. So one of the unique things about TCA is that not only do we support thoroughbred aftercare organizations, we also support the human side of our industry, the backstretch organizations, the organizations that are working to support farm workers. So, you know, in the way we accomplish that is we are a grant-making organization. So every year we raise funds as much as we can, and then distribute those funds out towards the end of the year, usually around early September or so. In 2020, we were able to just surpass the $1 million granting mark, so that was really exciting for us. We had about 70 grant recipients from across the country that received a grant from TCA. And, you know, we grant to, like I said, the two main categories, you know, humans and horses. But then we kind of break that down a little bit further. You know, we grant to the traditional aftercare organizations that are working to rehab, retrain, and rehome thoroughbreds. But we also support kind of more the incentive type organizations that are working to create demand for thoroughbreds in the sport horse market. So like the Retired Racehorse Project, the Thoroughbred Incentive Program. It's a really important sort of balance within the overall aftercare world to not only support the organizations that are there rehabbing, retraining, and rehoming, but those organizations that are working to create that marketplace. So our retiring thoroughbreds have a place to go after the track. You know, there's that demand for them as hunter jumpers or dressage horses or, you know, whatever the discipline may be. And then the other categories kind of within that, we support organizations that are working to provide equine assisted therapy services. So organizations that are perhaps working, veterans suffering from PTSD. There's a great organization out west called Down the Stretch Ranch that is doing some amazing work in that realm, and you know, we support them with the grant. And then on the human side, the Backstretch organizations working to provide health and human services for Backstretch employees, as well as farm employees. So we're pretty all encompassing when we say we help both horses and humans.
TCA, Thoroughbred Charities of America, starting today, the 31st annual Stallion Season Auction. I laid out either yesterday or Monday some of the I didn't really go through the names. I actually more or less focused on the breadth of seasons available and the nationwide availability. I mean, you've got virtually every regional breeding program that has a stallion represented in the auctions. Let's hit a few highlights. I just clicked over and it's live, of course. And some of the early bidding has begun.
That's right. The bids are coming in fast and furious. We like to see that. It's a great year, all thanks to our season donors. We couldn't do this without them. But I think at last count, we had 15 states represented in Canada. Kentucky obviously has the bulk of the stallions. But it's a pretty impressive list. You can access it by visiting our website, tca.org. You'll find a list of a link to click through to the list of seasons there on Starkline. Some of the highlights in the online auction that started today at 9 and runs through Friday at 4:30. We've got a Gun Runner. We've got a Spites Town. We've got a Klimt, Candy Ride, English Channel, Ghost Zapper, Palace Malice, More Than Ready. I mean, we've got quite a list there, and that's just in Kentucky. So, again, we really have to thank and give our hats off to our season donors. We're very well represented by just about every stallion farm here in Kentucky, so we certainly appreciate all of their support. And those are just the online seasons. So the online auction, like I said, closes on Friday at 4:30, but then we move to the Flex Season auction on Tuesday at Keeneland.
Well, and we should mention because, typically Sunday night, right, is usually the gala and the and the live auction and the silent auction and that, and you are hamstrung. So we should also fold in the goods and services and the memorabilia portion.
That's right. That's right. We concurrently with it's kind of auction central around here right now. Concurrently with the stallion season auction, we are running a separate silent online auction of non-season items. So, we're talking some halters and some, trips, tickets. There's a really nice assortment of various memorabilia and gift baskets and gift bags, things like that, artwork. We have super cool. It's an enable halter that was sent over to us from Judd Monty.
Oh, my God.
Hey, yeah, that's going to be a big one, I have a feeling. start the bidding on that one, because I think that'll go pretty high. Tappet's halter is in the auction. Vanning donated by Brookledge and Sally. Tex Sutton donated a flight, Equine Air Transportation. We have a John Deere riding mower donated by NTRA. So there's really quite an assortment of things there at every price point. And that auction runs through Tuesday evening. So that will wrap up after the select sale at Keeneland.
Yeah, and just thumbing through, I hadn't looked over, but there's sports, a lot of sports memorabilia and outdoor activities and jewelry and oh my God, you name it. There's an Uncle Mo halter plate.
That's right. Yep. Over 70 items at last count.
It occurs to me, too, and Sid Fernando is going to join us next after the break, and I'm going to maybe ask Sid, has anybody ever recorded or gone back, Aaron, to note specific horses that were bred using the seasons? Do we have a list of successful of horses that were prominent, in addition to just, horses that had, nice careers?
Right. That's a great question. And that's something we've talked about. And, we always say this kind of a great job if we have an intern, to kind of go back and look at some of that research.
Yes. Some poor schnook that's got to go dig through all this. Yes.
I do know of one that kind of came about sort of anecdotally, just the conversation I was having with a breeder several years ago now, but Heart to Heart was a season that was purchased, an English Channel season that was purchased in the TCA Stallion season auction. And of course, we all know Heart went on to be, such an amazing runner, and he's now standing at Crestwood. And he's actually in our auction this year. So we have our first, offspring of the auction that I'm aware of.
How about that? It's like the next generation, right? That is too funny.
Really was it cool. Another cool thing about Heart to Heart, he's obviously named for the heart shaped star on his forehead, and TCA's logo is a heart. So it's just such a feel good story all the way around, right?
That really is. And that Red Hawk Ranch in Ontario bred Heart to Heart. So they bought the English Channel season and matched him to Ask the Question, the Silver Deputy Mayor, and got the $2 million earner. Heart to Heart.
Right. Pretty impressive.
For the Hamiltons.
I like to think there's some good karma associated with the season purchases from our auction.
No doubt. And whether it's, whether it's a hat or tchotchke from the memorabilia portion, or, whether it's a season to Curlin, it goes to a great cause, and you have something tangible, obviously, on the other end, and you get to feel good. Aaron, we'll track the results so much immediately, but the bidding, and remind everybody the next couple of days and into Friday, 4:30 is the cutoff, and then, as Aaron mentioned, next week, you got the Keeneland bloodstock sale and the live auction there as well for the select seasons. Aaron, best of luck to everybody at TCA, tca.org, and the 31st Stallion Season Auction.
Thank you. We appreciate your support.
Not at all. Aaron Crady, everybody, and does a great job. And the TCA, one of the great umbrella organizations that has just provided in so many areas. And now you even know, some of the origin elements of how the concept originated. Little past the top of the hour. Let's take the break here, get the first opportunity to step away. And when we come back, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Rick Mocklin ahead as well to talk about his friends, Fred Amy and Kenny Bork, as well as Ed DeRosa and Seth Merrow. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place.